This is episode number 544 with poker champion Fedor Holz. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. John Barrymore said, "You can only be as good as you dare to be bad." Ooh, we've got a good one today. It's all about performing under pressure with high-stakes poker champion Fedor Holz. And Fedor Holz is a German professional poker player who focuses on high-roller tournaments. He's widely regarded as one of the best online and live tournament poker players in the modern era. He was ranked by Pocket Fives as best online MTT player in 2014 and 2015. And in July 2016, he won his first World Series of Poker bracelet in the $111,111 high roller for one drop, winning $4.9 million. He is currently the sixth highest ranked live tournament player in the global poker index, and he has trained other poker players as well. Now lives in Vienna, working on a startup called Primed Mind, which is all about mindset coaching to get us into this level of peak performance so we can perform under pressure. And what we cover in today's episode are how to detach yourself from what's at stake in your life so you can perform at your best. Also, why the mindset that it has to happen now is so absurd. Also, we talk about the day that changed his entire perspective and when he was able to go all in, how he keeps himself grounded during high stakes moments when all the pressure is on you. How do you stay grounded, and why Fedor is actually getting out of poker at such a young age. Very excited about this, but before we dive in, want to give a shout out to the fan and review of the week. This is over on iTunes, and this is from Kate's the Greats, who says, "I like this podcast because of the many different perspectives and personalities Lewis brings on the show. Learning from others who have been there and done that is really eye-opening. There are many paths to the same destination. You just have to find what is right for you." So Kate's the Greats, thank you so much for leaving your review over on iTunes. And now it's easier more than ever right now to leave a review. That's right. If you have your podcast app on your phone right now, you can literally just scroll down on the School of Greatness podcast and click a button to leave a review. It's so easy now where it used to be hard. So anyone that leaves a review, take a screenshot of that on your phone and tag me and post it on your Instagram story and tag me so I can say thank you and answer any question you have over on Instagram story. So for the first 10 people that leave a review, go and post it on your Instagram story and tag me so I can connect with you over there. I appreciate you very much for that review of the week. All right, guys, I'm pumped about this episode, so make sure to stay tuned. Share this with your friends. If you're over on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, the link is lewishowes.com/544. So let's dive into this. Let's learn how to perform under pressure with all the stakes in the world behind you with the one, the only, Fedor Holz.
Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these, but did you know that the U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut. If you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We have Fedor Holz in the house. Good to see you, man.
Hey, buddy.
Very excited that you're here. You are one of the top ranked live and online poker players in the world. You just won a big tournament, a high roller tournament. What was it, $50,000 buy-in? Is that right?
Yes. I didn't win, but...
You got top three or top four, right?
Yes, yeah.
In Vegas, and you've been, you know, competing in tournaments for how long now?
So I started playing 6-7 years ago, roughly. Uh-huh. But these tournaments, like you just referred to, probably like about 2-3 years.
Two, three years in the high roller scene. Yeah. And that's, what's a high roller? Is that a 20,000 plus buy-in? What does that include?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah, I think you would say probably 25 and higher is like the high roller.
What's the highest buy-in that you've done, you've played in?
500,000.
500,000.
Buy-in, yeah.
How many people were in that, like 20?
No, actually that was a bigger one. I think it was 40 or 50
people.
Something like that.
40, half, yeah. A million buy-in.
Yeah, it was a big
thing.
That's
crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's getting bigger and bigger. Like, I think they'll get a million again this year, probably. I mean, next year, but there's going to be, like, this is just getting bigger.
Wow. Half a million. How did you do in that tournament?
Not well.
You lost it all?
Yes, I did.
Lost it all.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you essentially, you know, you're not, obviously you have a little more control, but essentially you roll the dice and you hope that you land on black and win some money back. How do you feel when a half a million just is emptied from your bank account and a moment is gone?
I think there's two things to mention there. The first thing is, like, you don't put up a half a million yourself. So that's like in this scene, you know, like.
So it's not all your money.
Exactly. You know, it's kind of like you're pooling money in some way.
It's like you're getting investors.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's basically you're selling action of yourself. And then other people invest in you.
That's smart.
And yeah, because, I mean, it's just, you know, even if you have like a really healthy bankroll, 500K is a lot of money to put up. So
how much of your own money did you put into that?
That was, I think, 2015. Back then, I maybe put up like 25 or 30K.
That's it.
Of my own money, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's it. Back at that time, like, I think I was putting up a little too much, actually.
Yeah.
But
that's before you were making all the big money.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was. It's just like, as a poker player, we generally like we take this, or I took this really serious of like bankroll management. Basically, uh-huh. Not, you know, like, yes, you could fire like 100K or 200K in this tournament, but I wasn't, you know, it's not about hitting that one bink because I knew like I'm a good winning player. I just steadily,
yeah,
you know, if it's not this one, then it's the next one.
Yeah, of course. How does it feel when it's someone else's money compared to your money? Is there a different type of pressure or at stakeness? Or are you kind of like, if I lose it, whatever, you know?
I think that's why it's really important to have very professional investors. Yeah. Like the people that buy my action, they're like...
They're not emotionally attached, probably. So
yes,
they're not like, you got to get my money back.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's really the thing. It's generally like the thing I experience is that's what poker players are really, really good at, is like detach themselves from the money loss or like the emotion. Like, it's just, you know, you buy in and it's not money anymore. It's not like 50K, 500K is like one buy-in, right? So I put in one buy-in, whether it's $5 or 500, doesn't matter. Because I play one tournament, and if I win it, I win, you know, 20 times my buy-in, and that's it, you know? It doesn't, so like, you should play the same, And then that's the thing where people play completely different because, oh, you know, it's like a huge tournament. It's bigger, but you shouldn't. And I think that's where you can really see the difference between very professional players.
Do you think people should play the same in their life, no matter what the stakes are, whether it be you're a speaker and you're speaking in front of five people as opposed to 50,000 people? Is it possible to play the same in that regard too? Or a business meeting in front of, you know, pitching something to your team versus pitching something to try to bring in business?
I mean, what changes, right? Like
stakes.
Yeah, but the thing, like what changes from your perspective? You have the same story to tell, right? Why should you put less effort into convincing your teammates,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's as important. Like you're spending the time, so give your best.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the kind of idea is when you decide to do it properly.
Yeah, no matter what. When did you start to train your mind to disconnect from the emotion of the money or of the stakes or of the size? When did that start to come in?
I think...
Or did you always have it?
No. I think that's also something like... with all these things, it's never like you have it or you don't. And even right now, you know, just because I've like over really like hundreds of hours. Because in the beginning, I was, you know, maybe I was a little better than average. But it's not like, you know, oh, I'm this Zen guy. Like nothing can faze me. It's more like I had these moments too, you know. There were moments where I was just like, I just lost 20 days in a row and I lost like 50% of my bankroll. I'm like, God, like obviously in the beginning you don't, you know.
20 days in a row you lost.
Yeah, it's just like that's a very, very normal thing. You play too high stakes, you like, you get tilted. Like that's a huge thing. You're like, oh, like I can beat this guy, like and things. And then, I mean, I went broke like a couple of times in the beginning. You know, you have $1,000 or $5,000 and it's like you spin it up and then you break again because you're not such a great player.
Yeah.
And you think you can compete on higher levels than you actually can. And then that's, I think that's the point where you realize, oh, like you have to be disciplined. You have to really like know where you're at. You have to know how good you are. You have to know how good the other players are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you've been referring to is really this step. There's never enough of, you know, this is like an endless process. Right now, there is probably a lot less things that, you know, really get me tilted or like I'm like this really sucks,
mm-hmm.
but there's still things, so like I'm constantly and I actually created this routine around it. So it was like, okay, when I grinded a lot online, and back then I was really playing, you know, all the time.
Well, like 10 hours a day online, or
when I played probably like that, yeah, like, yeah. 10 hours a day. And then I really feel like I spend time with poker 80 hours a week, probably, like talking,
dreaming. Yeah, yeah, everything about it.
Minimum, you know, that's the thing. Like when I slept, like my roommates told me I was talking about hands, you know? And
All in. Yeah, yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Oh, where, my God, what where are am you? I? Where am I?
What are you?
What happened?
And then, you know, also just setting changes like this, right? Like you attract the people that have a similar mindset. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also where I've, like generally where I'm good at is like attracting people because I'm, like I'm curious about, you know, what do you have to say? Do you have, you know, what's your opinion? How can you say? I build this network of like interested people in poker, and then the whole topic is always poker, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of weird looking back at it now because it's like you didn't do much else than like, you know. And then I like traveling and like I like sports, but it was more like when, you know, when you were in this, that's all that mattered.
You guys were obsessed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what got you into poker in the first place? What was the curious moment?
I think in the beginning it was just...
Did you really, what, like 16 or 17 when you started?
Yeah. So 16, 17, yeah, about mm-hmm. that. And in the beginning it was just a home game with my friends. And like in school, all my friends were like 2-3 years older than me. And so we started this game and they're like, I was constantly losing money. I was like €2, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's okay, this is enough. Like, and so two of my really close friends, they made money with it. So they were playing online. They were like 19 or 20, 21.
Making a few thousand dollars a month or something. Or
exactly.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, back then it was like your student is like your baller, you know.
Yeah,
you're
of
like,
course.
Oh, laptop here. It's like drinks on me.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, wow, this is pretty awesome. So yeah. I was like, I started playing with them. And I would actually say I wasn't a good player in the beginning, like from most of the things. Like I was... generally, I would say I'm smart about games, but like the whole package around it of like the discipline and really like taking it serious and grinding it out, they were way better at that. They were like, you know, reliable kind of. And I was more like...
They're consistent.
Exactly. Yeah. I wasn't a consistent person at that time, actually. And then,
in life, you mean in general?
Yes, very general. It was more like there was one thing that really hooked me and I'd like... dove super deep into it, and then at some point I was just like, oh, okay,
this, yeah,
like I don't know.
Something else, some shiny object.
Exactly.
Yeah. And were you a gamer before? Like,
yeah,
video games, card games, everything. Board games.
Yes, anything. Everything that challenged my mind, I always loved it. Like,
yeah.
Played a lot of video games, played chess. Yeah, I played tons of games. Everything that was like, oh, like I wanna.
Yes. Okay. Cool. And when did you start to see like, oh, actually, I'm not that bad?
I think that started about when I turned 18.
18. So a couple years later.
Yeah, like 1-2 years later, I was like, okay, like I got in touch with the community. You know, you started being in forums and like chatting. Like, you know, Skype was the thing back then. So you're chatting with all these people. And
reading a lot of books as well, or just
actually, on
poker?
I've read half of a book about poker. It's like, and that's the thing in poker, I think the game progresses so fast.
Yeah, everything changes.
It's like a book. There's a couple books right now, I'd say maybe 2-3 books that have really good fundamentals, but way better to talk to people because then you get like that.
And play and experience it and get feedback right away, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
So you started to realize when you're 18 that it started to work a little bit. Were you just making a little money, or was it mostly online then, or was it?
I started.
All your friends were broke because you were taking all their money.
No, actually, not at all. I would still say I was pretty on the lower end at that point. I was like, having some success, but still like having these kind of like outbursts of like, why am I doing? What am I doing this for? Because at that time, I finished school with 17, and then. Started studying and played at the same time, kind of. And I was like...
Studying in university? Or,
yes, yeah. University. And so it was like in school, I wasn't I wasn't the best student. Like really skipping a lot of classes and sleeping and all that stuff. And somehow because teachers liked me, kind of like I got through it.
Sure.
And then started studying. And all my family was like, you know, you got to... kind of started taking things serious now. I was like, okay, like this is what I'm going to do now. And I was really like, okay, I'm going to force myself now. I'm going to do this. And so it's kind of like, what did I study? I think you call it like computer science. And God, it was like, it drained. Like after 4 months, I was like, I couldn't, you know, nothing worked anymore. I was doing this for like 50, 60 hours a week. It was really very competitive, very hard study actually. And then I was just like, I got ill for 1 week and I was just, okay, I cannot do this anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you know, no socializing, not much socializing. I was just like, oh, weekends, you gotta, you know, work or like learn some. And I just felt like, you know, I was mediocre. I was like somehow passed, was maybe like the top 10% or something. Yeah. And I worked so hard and I was like, okay, I cannot do this.
Yeah.
If I put so much time into something and I'm not, you know,
excited about it and growing, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
So you decided then to go, like, I'm going to try this poker thing and see what happens, or...?
To be honest, I think it was desperation. It was really, it was not like, oh, you know, now I have this other great option. It was more like, oh, I actually have no real option.
I have to figure this out no matter what.
It was like, yeah, you know, this was the other thing I was kind of doing all the time. And it was like, okay, you know, just... I would say it was more like the next best thing to spend my time on. And then I was like, okay, but at least, you know, now I got to take this serious.
Yeah.
And that's when I started, was like, okay, this is how I do it now. I start from here and I do it like solid. And did not work out well in the first year.
Really?
But the thing that worked out well was like my reputation in the community. Like a lot of people were like, oh, you know, this guy's smart. Like he talks smart about it. But like still the way I played, very inconsistent. Still, and that's the emotional part. Like,
so you got emotional around things still.
Yeah, it's just like you have this absurd expectation. You know, you got to be winning right now. So, you know, if it doesn't happen in like the next 5 months, you're like, that's I feel like how our generation kind of things, or like how I thought at that time too, and I still do in a lot of situations. Is like, oh, it has to happen now. You know, if it doesn't happen in the next 3 months, so like, how, you know, like it's not
I'm
gonna
a
work.
Failure and this and that,
exactly,
yeah.
And it's like. Instead of just being like, slowly seeing the progress, setting goals, being like, okay, this is where I want to go, and changing my surrounding to get to that goal. And I think that was the thing that I realized at some point is like, okay, I have to get out of this. Like, there's so many bad influences around me where I'm being distracted. Everyone's telling me like, hey, you're a failure. Like, go back to university, go study, do something real.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And then I set this deadline, 1st January, I'll quit everything. I left my stuff behind. I was like, okay, like I want to make, you know, at least 5K till that point, whatever it takes, so I can like book a flight, no return, and just like see where it takes
me. Right, right. So you made a goal. Was that within like a month or a couple months to make 5K? Or?
I think I started, and there were two things that happened actually. And that was like, I have this day. It was like such a weird day. It was like June or July approximately. And I've been watching like, yeah, May, June, something like that. And I've been watching a lot or reading a lot about people that just like do running and marathons and like extreme sports. And my dad does it as well. It was like, just as like, I need some kind of challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I looked at it and I read something and I watched a video and I was just like, okay, let, you know, like if I, because I've never been a person that just does things. I was just like, oh, awesome idea. I've been a dreamer. You know, it's like, oh, what a great idea. And like, we could do like this. And then you don't do it. And it was like,
you never executed and stuck with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was happening in poker too. And the reason why I stuck with it was because there was, you know, like I was in a pretty bad spot. Like no money, you know, like my family is kind of poor, or like, so, or like we never had much money. And then like I basically had like a couple hundred euros to live with like a month. And so it was this place where I was like, okay, you know, I have to, then I realized at some point it just clicked and I was like, okay, like I have to change something drastically. And I sat there and I was like, okay, let's just go. And I walked out in the stuff I had on and I just ran for like an hour. And then I came back. And then I did this almost every, like literally like 6 times a week probably.
Mm.
Every day.
Running.
Yes. And I just went. And the only thing I had was I had to be faster than the day before.
Mm.
So to really feel this like, you know, I'm progressing. Mm-hmm. I'm actually getting somewhere. I'm getting better. And I think this kind of gave me this, okay, and I was like, okay, I cleared my mind in some way. And I actually don't enjoy running, which is really weird. Like, and today, there's like no way you can get me to run. It's just like, oh, why am I doing this? But back then, it was really this thing of getting better at something. And I actually improved my time like a lot. And I was like, okay, I'm going to train for a marathon.
Mm.
And then I broke my ankle 3 weeks before. And then I never did it. But yeah, that was the point where I really felt like something was turning. And then I've got some success. I made more than 5K in that year. And then I went on the trip.
Right. You went on the trip.
I did, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's the biggest obstacle you've ever had to overcome?
That's a good question. I mean, it's really, there's nothing that really pops to mind. I think it's been generally more like stretches rather than like, okay, there's this one thing that I just, you know, can't. Actually, the one thing that immediately pops to my mind is bungee jumping because I'm super afraid of like, not heights necessarily, but more like the idea of falling or jumping off somewhere. And that was the first thing I was like, I just get this feeling right now, like the goosebumps and everything. Sure. That took me a lot of energy. But besides that, I think there was one moment in, or there have been a couple of moments. There's just these moments where you just feel like everything is, I don't know how like if you had this, where I was just like, why am I doing this? I was really like for a week or two. I was like, why am I here? You know, why am I doing what I'm doing? This has been probably the biggest obstacles. I was literally questioning every single thing I was doing, and I just like I didn't know anymore. Like, what am I doing from like forward, and like what have I been doing all that time?
Yeah, I think lack of vision is one of the scariest places to be. If we don't know why we're doing what we're doing or where we're heading, then we're just kind of lost in our mind, and so many things can come up for us. Yeah,
it's mainly because I'm pretty aware of being very like always looking for growth. It's just like I love, you know, these conversations. I love meeting new people. That's why I'm like push myself all the time. It's like I travel too much and like meet new people, and like I never turn down a meeting. I'm like, come by, and we meet here, and we do that. And then that also has some downsides where I just have to take some more time. But it's this question of like, when does it end? You know, what are you doing it for? You know, like, yes, you grow, but like, what is the actual thing that comes out of it? And it's this, that's, I think, the contribution part, where like, when is the time where you really feel like you're giving something back? And I think that's the part where that I question a lot is like, you push that back, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I'm going to grow, and I give back a little bit here and there. It's like, I talk to people as well, but then is it, why am I not doing it, you know, like all the time or way more? Because that's, you know, because that other thing feels selfish, and that might actually have some positive impact.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're contributing back to the best of your abilities?
No. I don't think so.
What could you be doing to give back more?
I think that is the question. Like, it feels like I could be doing more. But I also feel like it has to be in the right way for it to be, because I also think I just didn't find the right way yet. I just didn't find something where I can combine both things so that I can keep doing it for a longer time. It's more like, okay, I could do something now for like a month or two or some time, but I never found a spot where I was like, okay, this is, and maybe I'm you know, just not pushing myself hard enough. Maybe I should push myself more into these situations of really like spending time with people. And yeah, I think that's a good question.
Something to think about. When so much is at stake, how do you keep yourself grounded?
I think it's the way I set up my brain. It's really like the way I think about decisions and feelings is very I spent a lot of time on this. I think this is probably the thing I spent the most time on in that regard, is really dissecting what are the different parts of a decision and what are the different parts of that outcome and what makes me feel that way and why did it happen like that.
Mm.
So
walk me through the process.
So you're referring to, for example, now, right, like losing money or like losing a lot of money. And it's, then I think that the big issue people have with this is when it didn't make a conscious decision.
Mm.
You know, when it's like, oh, you know, you basically make a decision based on 80% this kind of emotional like outburst is like, okay, you know, let's gamble or let's do this. And then you're like, oh, later the rationality kicks in. And then it's like they now have a different decision-making process basically. And they're like, oh, why did I do this? And I think having this same process in basically like very consistent in all different areas and then being able to reflect on it. So it's like, why did I make that decision, right? Like, why did I make that decision to put up that amount of money? Do I feel good with that decision, right? So now it's like, okay, I put up 50K, 100K for a tournament. And now I feel bad afterwards about losing it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, why is that, right? Why do I feel bad? Because I made that decision. Do I think that was a good decision? If I think it was a good decision, then I shouldn't feel bad, right? Because the outcome doesn't matter. It's just basically this, we feel bad if we lose and we feel good if we win, whereas the only thing that should matter is, do you feel good about the decision, right? Because that's how it's going to be with everything. It's not like you're never going to make decisions where it's going to be 100% right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not, if that's how you want to make decisions, you're doing something wrong, you know, and that's risk. It's just every decision you take has some risk of downside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it's one of the best decisions you made, it might turn into something bad because you just cannot see all the parts of it.
Yeah. I see when, you know, I've had Maria Sharapova on a few times. She's one of the best tennis players in the world. And I see when she plays at the end of a point, whether she scores or she loses the point, she kind of does the same motion. It's like you reconnecting yourself. She doesn't like celebrate in a big way and she doesn't get down on herself no matter what. It's kind of consistent. And I think a lot of the greatest tennis players do this. They're very consistent in their reaction towards the decisions or the actions that they made. Do you think about that as well when you go all in on something and then you lose? Are you more of a, what was I thinking? Or is it all neutral for you? Your responses are just, oh, I won a lot of money, neutral. I lost it all, neutral. And do you think that's how people should be living their lives?
I mean, that's a very complex question, I think. And maybe two questions, but that's also a reason why I'm getting out of poker. Like, because I think it makes you, it just develops you into a certain direction of exactly this. Everything is neutral. Whereas, like, I feel like...
Because if you're a roller coaster, it's very hard to manage.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
And I think that's also one of the biggest strengths of very good players is that they're just super consistent.
No matter what. Win, maybe a little smirk. Lose. Sorry.
Very different from player to player.
Yeah.
But I think that was mainly like because I spent so much time on it. It's really like this, you know, you shouldn't be too happy when you win, which is such a weird thing, right? Like, don't be happy.
Because you can lose.
Don't be sad. Yeah. You know, be a robot, basically.
Yeah.
But this is what it leads to, is like everything is just neutral, you know, whatever. And then you actually realize, you know, when everything is neutral, poker is not really, you know, such a cool thing anymore, because the thing that you're going,
it's a lot of long hours, it's a lot of long days. Yeah.
So it's like the thing then it gets like minimized to is financial interest and some kind of mental competition, right? And then I was like, okay, if you know, if everything else goes away, if it's not about, you know, that thrill of like losing money, winning money, is like that excitement,
that rush, yeah.
That was just all irrational. You know, it's all this kind of thing that we're looking for, we're just chasing, you know, it's just like, we all want this, you know, and when you train hundreds of hours of like getting rid of this by like this routine, you know, injecting logic is like, you don't, you know, this doesn't make sense. this is how I want it to be. Worst players have to win because that's what brings money into the game. Focus on making good decisions. Then you realize, oh, actually that game, you know, loses a lot of its magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you say are the key elements of some of the top players in the world? What do they have? And what have they removed?
I think that's the thing. That's what I actually like about poker a lot. I think it's a really good training camp because it trains so many different areas. It's not only playing a card game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where I think it is very different to something like chess. Because you miss out on all these other aspects around it. Like in poker, it's a lot about networking. It's a lot about a lot more about money management, which is like, there's very few areas that are like this.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to run your own business. You know, like there's no one that really takes care of you. There's no like, you do you. You know, you're your own kind of entity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of money involved in like a wild, wild west, like Wild West kind of like setting. You know, there's no contracts. There's like nobody, you know, like people, like there's a lot of stuff going on in the scene. So I think that's teaching you a lot of things in like a street, you know, street smart kind of way. Mm-hmm. Like you just see very quickly what people's intentions are. You see what they want. You know, it's like that's what you do all day.
Yeah.
Nothing but like, what is he trying to get from me?
Of course. Basically. Yeah. And how do you coach yourself when you lose? How do you train yourself to be able to come back and kind of have a short-term memory, I guess, so you can come back and focus on being confident and having a powerful mindset in the next hand or next tournament?
I think it's all about like what kind of decision you made and not about the outcome. So again, it's like, am I happy with my decision? Then it doesn't matter.
What if you're not happy with the decision?
That's the issue. Is like, then you're like, okay, that's actually the thing. The thing now that becomes more complicated is like, but then that process is a little longer. It's like, okay, I'm generally a person, I don't like to make mistakes twice. Right. So I'm like, because I think that we made so many experiences in our life, if we would utilize them by actually extracting the value, and I think we intentionally forget a lot of things, we unconsciously forget a lot of things, and there's so many things we've done already, we know already. And we make this mistake sometimes, we make them 5, 6, 7 times without even realizing, oh, this is actually something I can easily change.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this case, it's also, okay, like I made something that makes me feel bad. I did something. And like, why is that? Right? Like, why do I feel bad about? And so I'm like, I'm just going on this research now. Is like, what happened, right? So basically going to the lab. It's like checking out like what's the best play, talk to other players, and then fix this and set that frame right so I will not make the same mistake again.
Yeah. Do you think anyone can perform at the highest level at their craft? Or does it only work for certain types of people?
I think we're all very at the beginning. And that's why I think everyone can, relatively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think, there's some people that are better than others and some that are like have it easier than others. But I think relatively everyone can be excelling at this because I think very few people invest a lot of time in it.
Mm-hmm. How do we train our minds to be able to perform at high levels?
I think visualization is extremely important. Generally, I believe that having this, I think it's like it's a process that happens in your mind, is you do something and you connect a habit with it.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you do something that you want to train, you're like, okay, now I have this process that I preset that happens right after. So it's like, I have a habit that I don't like, so I put this process right after. So it's like, oh, I was tilting a lot, right? So whenever a certain situation happened, a bad player won against me, I was like, oh, this made me angry, right? So this, I don't want this emotion there. So I decided for myself, I don't want this there.
So how did you get rid of it?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it doesn't happen overnight, right? So, but every single time it happens, I'm like, okay, I write it down. right? So it's like every time I feel the feeling, I write it down, and then I write down why it shouldn't be there. So I was like, I shouldn't feel bad about this because that's the exact reason why I make money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the only reason why this game even exists is the luck factor. Right? And so actually, that turns now, if you do this 150 times, now it turns into you smiling. Because you're like, you realize, oh wow, this is actually, this is awesome. You know, because without that, like, there would be nothing.
Yeah. And you've done that to other players where you're like, got something. And
exactly.
You're like, oh, right? Awesome.
So then there's a lot of things, like, I did a lot of different things. It's like, for example, every single time I do, like, the same thing to someone else, I write it down too.
Mm-hmm.
I think generally focusing on positivity is also, you, like, is so, so awesome to turn around these things.
Yeah.
Just in general, broaden perspective and switch where I feel like you have this really stuck perspective. Just try to find a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
About all the things that made me feel bad. So that, yeah, that's my approach.
Gotcha. What do you think about most of your time?
That's a good question and very hard. Like, I can say it broadly is more like, I feel like I'm, I like to play puzzles. I think this is generally how it, like, kind of directing things. Like, I'm never the person that is really, like, hands-on, like, executing, like, mm-hmm, making it perfect. It's more like I just lean back and I'm like, I, you know, like, put the pieces together, the right people. I think I'm very good at grasping 80, 90% of something and not good at the last 5, 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why it has to be big, because then a lot of 80%, a lot of different things, that's where, you know, the skill,
yeah,
comes in.
Yeah.
Because most of the people are, you know, like, a lot of people are like 95 at something, and then they're like not so good at seeing other things and like connecting the different areas. So the bigger the project is or the bigger the challenges, and that's also, I think, why poker is a great area, is because I wasn't, I'm actually not like, you know, I think the game itself, I wouldn't be like a world-class player. I'd be good, but I wouldn't be, you know, the top. But it's more the combination of everything, of like connecting the right people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had outstanding people around me.
Mm-hmm.
They all, we literally started all on the bottom, six of us, all playing like probably top 30 in the world right now. So it's like, yeah. That, and I think, you know, that's where I can soak up information.
Yeah. Wow. And what do you dream about a lot?
That's a funny background story. I was dreaming a lot when I was a child. Very, very vividly. I had a couple lucid dreams as well, which I only figured out afterwards, because I had, I don't know exactly how do you call it, but I woke up once in a lucid dream. So it's like you wake up, but you can't move.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, like, my mom brought me to the hospital. Like, they came over, and like then that's.
So you woke, like, up in the dream, but you felt paralyzed.
Yes, because your body still sleeps.
When your eyes were open, or your, yes, eyes were shut.
My eyes were open, and I, yeah, could, I could, like, hawk like this.
Dude, I have had that multiple times.
Yeah.
Where my eyes were shut, but I was awake, but I was paralyzed.
Yeah.
And I was, it's, I felt like I was screaming.
Yes.
But nothing was coming out.
Yes.
And I've done this a few times, and then somehow I, like, scream so much in my lucid dream that I, like, wake my body up, and then I finally, like, let it out. But I feel like it takes forever. It's crazy, man.
The thing is, I cannot remember the feeling. It's more like this. It's like as if I watched myself.
It's scary. How it happened. It's like paralysis. I almost feel like
my mom freaked out. It was literally like, you cannot do anything. You just see someone freaking out completely. It's like.
Wow, dude. Yeah. I didn't know other people had that. I've never shared that because I'm always like, what is this? You know, I don't know. It only happens once in a while, but yeah.
That's the part is like, I had this, and then like I've been bullied in school, and it was like, had a really bad time around that time because I skipped a class, and I was like maybe 11 or 12, and everyone was like 14. And that's like a gap where I feel like, you know, just two different interests.
Yeah.
And
did you skip classes or something, or did you skip,
yeah,
grades or?
I skipped one grade.
Got it.
And I got into school one year early.
Got it. So you were 11 or 12 when they were 13, 14.
Yes. So, and I think that was a gap. You know, I was also physically a little weaker. And then it was like just the thing of, I think, just, you know, not when you're the one. And I think that was the turning point, actually, where I was like, okay, I cannot be smart anymore. Mm. You know, you just don't want to say things anymore because, like, you just... So, yeah, at that time, and that's when these turned into nightmares. And that was like... And that's also where the fear of falling comes from, because I've like had a lot of these dreams where I was falling. Like, it was always the same. It was chasing what, like, and that's the crazy part about it is like, now retrospectively, now that I had normal dreams, I could change the world. Like, I could literally, like, I could always change the setting. I could change different things, but it was always a chase. There was always something running behind me, basically, like whether it's people or animals or whatever. And then the last part was always falling somewhere, like off a cliff or a house, whatever. And when I crash on the floor, I wake up.
Yeah.
And I had this feeling, and that feeling of hitting the ground, and it's just like, you know, it just goes through your body, and you're like straight awake. And that was over like weeks and weeks. And I like cried myself to sleep. Mm-hmm. I was like, couldn't sleep without light anymore. I was like, I didn't want to go to sleep anymore. And then at some point, I felt like my body reacted to this, where it was like, I just didn't dream anymore. It was like this one point, like everything changed. I was like, I fell asleep in like 10 seconds. I slept for 9 hours like a rock. You couldn't wake me up. I did not dream. I did not move. I just, you know, slept 9 hours, and then I woke up and I was like, always like tired, really, really tired after I woke up too. And I felt like something just, you know, changed in my, like, it just blocked it out. Mm. So that was an interesting phase. And that's also where my performance really went down. It's like, really? I couldn't, no passion about things anymore. It was not like, as a child, I was really like excited about everything and like, very quick at learning things, and then it was just like, no, I don't want to do anything anymore.
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20 Pure Leaf. That's promo code 20 PURELEAF for 20% off. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
How connected to achieving results is visualization and dreaming then? Since you weren't dreaming in those moments or being able to visualize in your sleep, do you feel like
I think it's a huge part.
Really?
I mean, just now that I can feel that it's getting back, it's coming back, like I sleep better, and I'm actually sometimes have dreams again, and it's like, because I also think about this a lot, and like, I try to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
And
do you feel like you're running towards something or running away from something?
I think both. I think it's, I'm not at the point where I can say, you know, it's only running towards something. I think it's running towards some things and running away from some things.
What are you running away from?
I think the main thing is probably how people perceive me. Like, I think that's, and there's different, that's both. Like, it's, some things I tackle and some other things I don't. And I think it's these two things where it's like, one is respect and one is fame. Whereas I feel like I like now get better at not, like, I don't care too much about fame. You know, I'm not like, it's not like I need people like taking pictures with me or things like this, but I care a lot about people respecting me. Like,
why?
That's the big question, right? And I think that has a lot to do with just this, the social setting, you know, I've always been in, and like my whole life, how I grew up, like all the experiences I made, basically all that condensed into like super high expectations through, like, you know, just being a smart kid, and everyone, you know, my whole family is. And the worst thing I ever did was taking an IQ test. Like, that was literally that moment that happened for me as a child. You know, it was just like another day, basically. And I had to take one because of the new school. And then everyone was like, oh my God, you know, like, he has to do this. And then expectations just went like through the roof. And I was like,
how'd you score on your IQ test?
I think I did 2 or 3, and it was like somewhere, I'm not 100% actually anymore, I think somewhere 145, a little under 150, something like this. And it was just like, you know, then they have this like, oh, you're blah smart, and it was suddenly and I actually think I was just very good at the game, like the games,
the puzzle, the test.
Yes, yeah, yeah. The test is not, it's not like asking too many different, it was all kind of the same thing. It was like, this is not really such a broad spectrum. It was like all very kind of logic games rather than anything else. I was like, okay, this is I'm good at, but I'm not good at a lot of other things.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that. And then it was like, from that point on, there was no winning anymore. So that's why I was like, okay, you know, whatever you do, like, you can be really good. It's like, oh yeah, expected. You're like, you know, you're not so good. It's like, what are you doing? You know, like, and then I was just, okay, at some point it's pointless. And I think that's where this comes from. Is like, I put this to myself too. I was like, you know, whatever I do, it's like, you have to be better. There's no, and I think that's where the growth part comes in too. It's like both good and bad, right? Like, I do it for, sometimes for the wrong reasons.
What if the people you want to respect you never do?
I don't know. I think it's a learning process. I think I'm getting better at it. It's more, I think it's mainly what I need is to spend time with myself. Is really figuring out, why do I need that, right? Because in the end, you know, it's you and yourself. Because everything you project, like, everything's like, oh, how do others perceive me, is only something that happens in your mind.
Yeah.
So if they don't respect me, you know, what, like, what for? Why not? What did I, you know, like, if I can respect my, like, it's all just information that you can process and make something out of it.
Yeah.
So,
walk me through a hand. Walk me through a hand. When you get 2 cards sent your way, what's the process like for you in that moment?
Okay.
Do you have a routine? Do you have the same thing you do every time? What do you think about? Are you assessing the room? Are you listening to other people around you? Are you looking in their eyes? Are you looking down? What's the process?
Okay. Let me try to break it down. So, because I've been thinking about this recently, and I gave coaching, so like I had to break it down before.
Yes.
So in a general way, is like, I get 2 cards, right? So the first thing I think about is ooh.
2 cards.
Okay, just not 2 jokers though.
Exactly. It's kind of sticky. 2 cards, here we go.
Okay.
You have 2 cards, then what?
So the first thing is like the setting of the game, right? Like, this I know at this point is like, who am I playing with, right? Like, how many players are we? What kind of game are we playing?
Yes.
Right? So most of the time, it's going to be some tournament setting. There's going to be blinds in a game, right? So it's like a small blind and a big blind. And I get 2 cards. It's like, okay, what position am I in, right? So let's say we're 6 players, and now there's a big, they're like a lot of things happen that aren't really conscious decisions anymore. It's just like that happens like this, right? So now there's six players, and I'm thinking, okay, like I'm first to act, for example, right? So I know, okay, roughly first to act, I would probably play about 18% of my hands, depend or like between 15 and 22, depending on like what the blinds are, how much is in the pot, basically.
If you're first to act, you'll play about 20%.
Roughly, right? Like, something like this. And then now there's basically, you have this baseline, right? Like, that's roughly. And then there's all these different informations that come in with every decision, right? So it's like, okay, what players are on the table, right? Are they more aggressive or are they more passive? So that's, right? So I have this baseline now and it's like, more aggressive, I play a little tighter. So I open less hands. If they're more passive, I play more hands. Like the more passive there are, the more hands I play.
Right. You might play 25-30%. Yeah.
Exactly. So every information, the weight of that information is changing the way I play. Right. And the more confident I am in that information, the more I will adjust my play. So that's the two things now. What I'm talking about is one is the basic strategy, and the other thing is adaptation.
Mm hmm.
So, which is basically reads and information about how players play.
Right.
And so, then also a lot of other things like the tournament setting, for example, right? Are we six players left? And there's like, what are the payouts and so on, right? Are we 200 players left? So that also changes the situation. But now, then I'm like, okay, I have this baseline in my head. And I'm like, okay, I look down at my hand. I'm like, okay, nice hand. So it's in this range.
Yes.
And then I open raise this hand.
What if it's not a nice hand?
Then I fold.
Fold it.
Yeah. Right? So that's the two things.
It's a nice hand.
If it's in that range, that decision. And that's the thing where it's like that inconsistency, right? So there's going to be players that two things. One thing is they don't know the basic strategy well enough. And the other thing is they don't adapt well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These are the two main things where you can go wrong. Is like, for example, they think you should be open raising 10%, or they think you should be open raising 30%, and then like they make mistakes straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And if they adjust based on that, then they make an even bigger mistake.
Yeah, and they try to make up for it. Yeah,
basically. Yeah. So this is what happens, and then like basically this process happens over and over again on every single decision. So it's like next, you know, someone calls me, for example, and then. So let's say the big blind. So it's like fold, 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 and the big blind calls.
So it's you two.
Heads up, right? So two players in a pot. So you have two cards now.
Yes.
Right?
I'll so a couple aces.
So
here we go. Two cards. These are like sticky for some reason.
And
yep.
So yeah. So now you get two cards, and then you call, for example, and then there comes a board, like three cards, right? So now it's again, right? You will do something. Then I think about, what do I want to do now that I have these, let's say, 20% of hands left, right?
Yeah.
Now that I have these 20% of hands left, how do I want to play these, right? How much of these 20% do I want to check? How much do I want to bet? And then that's my basic strategy again. And then I look at you, I'm like, do I know anything about this guy?
And I'm like, what if you don't know anything about him or her?
If I don't know anything about it, I stick to my basic strategy.
Got it.
But there's always something, you know. Like this is the awesome part about it is non-information is also information, right? And there's so much information. If I don't know you, that means you can't be good.
Hmm. Right?
Because
you study the game, you study
because I know
winning,
everyone that
you
is
see
good.
Who's on the top 100 list. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, it is extremely unlikely, just given by that I, like, it's kind of the counter equity, you know, of like a probability is like, if I know the top 500 players in the world, it's very, very, very unlikely that you're a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's the first thing, right? The next thing is, I look at you and I'm like, okay, look, what kind of country are you from? What kind of population are you gonna be like? What age range are you? Like, what's your background? You know, what's the value of materialistic, like, what kind of watch do you wear? Like, things like this. Who did you talk to before? How do you like look at your cards? Is it more a professional? Like, have you played before? Can I see that you actually know what you're doing? How do you stack your chips? It's all these little things that add up to, like, on a scale of like non-professional to professional, I can guess, you know, it's the same way you can guess, oh, you're 28, you know, mm-hmm. or 33. It's like you just, because you have, why can you say that? Is because you look at eyes, eyebrows, mm-hmm. mouth, nose, face, wrinkles, and so on, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. I can guess, oh, like, you've seen a lot of people that are 30, 31, 32 before, and you match.
Right.
So I've seen hundreds, thousands of people, you know, play poker, and I've seen so many different ways of playing, so I match. It's like, where does he match? And so then I'm like, oh, he's probably an amateur. So how do I play against an amateur? I'm probably more likely to bet.
Right.
So,
and then based on the next few cards, you assess where you're at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's always the in my head, that's always the decision making. I have like a visualization of my basic strategy. So I have, right, when I think about the 20%, I have like a visualization of it. It's not like I think, like I write down 20% in my head. It's more like a square, and then I take like 20% square of that.
Sure, sure.
And then that's that left, and so on.
Yeah. Do you like to look people in the eyes when you're competing against them? Or?
Most of the time, yeah. I think tells is a pretty big thing in poker.
Tells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, there's so, again, so many little nuances. Like, I make a lot of decisions. There's a lot of very close decisions. And I think that I can gain an edge by trusting my instinct, because people are generally not good at deceiving. It's just humans. Humans in general are not good at deceiving.
Do you feel like you are?
Mm.
Or how do you misdirect your competition?
I also, like, I'm on the lookout for it, but there's two things. First of all, people don't look too much at me. I think that's the first thing.
They don't look at you. They look down or like, yeah.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people feel like they don't, like, they rather try to not give something away rather than to look at me, which is also a reason why I look at them. Because it gives me this, like, I can be more free, you know? Like, I don't have to look too much at what I do if I know
right.
they don't look.
Yeah. What's the big tell of yes. someone else when you
okay,
know?
Okay, let me go through the list. There's tons of stuff.
How do you know when someone...
Because
sometimes they could be, like, swallowing their throat because they've got a big hand, or, like, how do you know it's...
And again, it's all
that they have.
I call it like I think it's dumb to say this is this.
Right.
Right? Like it's generally the same. It's never like this in life. Yeah. You know, it's never like, oh, when he looks at you like this, that is always
right,
this.
Right, right, right. Because fear and excitement is the same emotion, so it's kind of like,
you know, that there's certain people, like, yes, most people look like this, right? Mm-hmm. When it's most people that cry, probably cry because it's most likely someone died.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly, you know, but it's not always like this. Could also be because of joy.
Right, right, right.
But it's less likely. People cry way more often because of sad things exactly. than because of happy things.
Right.
Doesn't mean that it's always sad.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, yes, if you give me 1-1 on it being sad, I take it, you know? So it's like this kind of thing where it's just probabilistics. And then the thing how I go about it is, how confident am I? And the more confident I am, the more I adjust. So, for example, if I play against an amateur, I'm way more confident in my reads. Mm-hmm. And I adjust heavily. Like, I do really crazy things because I'm just like, I don't care what hand I have because I know, right. you know, what
you're
you
playing
have.
Yeah.
So, the more confident I am, the more, like, I completely go away from my basic strategy. The more the adaptation
uh-huh,
happens.
Uh-huh.
So, it's like, when an amateur is like, let me go through the list. So it's like, throat is really big, like gulping. Generally, one big thing is also force looking. Like if people are fixing one point, like amateurs specifically,
because they don't want to look and give anything away. So
yes.
It's like,
the harder they try to not give anything away, more likely it is they don't have, like, they're bluffing.
Gotcha.
It's really, because it's really like they're like this. Okay. it's actually biologically as well. It's like this kind of dead, like,
oh,
playing dead.
Dead. Oh. So if you're more relaxed and you're looking around and you're comfortable to look someone in the eyes,
yes,
you might
Yes.
More likely to have something.
Drinking is probably one of the strongest reads.
Really?
If people drink, like, they have it a lot of times, yeah.
They have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's just one of the most relaxed things you
can
do.
Oh, yeah. Relaxed.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just...
Yeah. So you take a drink, like, every hand, you're like...
It's a good strategy.
Yeah, right? You never know.
if you're bluffing a lot.
Yeah.
Then what else is there? Like, generally, pulse is a huge thing. Like, pulse is crazy.
Pulse?
Like, pulse, yeah. Like,
yeah. You can see the pulse?
Oh, yeah, you can. Like, it's like, and that's the thing where it's like, I do that a lot in, like, tournaments where there's no time restrictions, so you can wait a long time. Yeah. Like, on the river, mostly in big decisions. So not in, like, small, but, like, in big decisions. I put them in an uncomfortable situation by, like, staring at them or making it really obvious, like, that I have, playing with chips and, like, or saying something, like, oh, I have a really good hand or something.
And seeing.
And then the thing, I just wait. Because mostly people relax slightly when they know that they cannot lose.
When they got something, they're like.
Yeah. Because, you know, like.
Whatever you have.
Your pulse is just naturally decreasing. You're excited. Like, that's the thing, as you said before, like, fear and excitement are really similar in the beginning, but they don't stay the same.
Yeah.
Because fear is stays longer than excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pulse is generally staying up staying high when they're bluffing. And then it goes, like, it relaxes somewhat. So you can see muscle tension, right? So when they're, like, tense and then when they loosen up, you can, okay. Like, this is also something. Yeah. So, hands is a big thing. I think a lot of players have something with their hands. Is like
something or there.
No, actually, the sweat on fingers, nose as well, but also, like, the color of the hands. That's, like, a thing that I've seen with a lot of players. Is like
really,
and then timing, like, here, especially here, a lot of people that have thin skin.
Yeah.
You can see that they get, like, a little...
Like red or something or what? Really?
Yeah, like these like...
Patches or something. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very, very slightly. But I've seen that a lot of times. Huh. And...
I mean, they don't have it then.
Usually. It's more... That doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have it. It just means something.
Something,
and that happens, like... It's just good to know that, you know, there's something's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it really means that they are not interested. So some kind of interest.
Yes.
So you can adjust already based on that.
Yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LEWIS.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
And then... I think I mentioned a couple of things.
Yeah, yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
What would you say is the... a couple questions left for you. What would you say... Did I win the hand?
You did. You made a flush, no?
I had an ace. Yeah, yeah. What would you say is... what has poker taught you about relationships?
That's a good question. I think the one thing I learned that... Or the one thing at least that I took out for myself is I want mutually beneficial relationships. Because I think that's the only way for it to be long-lasting relationships. Yeah. And I'm really focusing now on what does it give me? What can I give?
Mm-hmm.
And it taught me that I don't want to be too forced. In like, you know, we're friends for 5 years. Like we, you know, now we have to, like, the sixth year has to be as good as, and it's just like, be free with people. Like, you know, things just change.
Mm-hmm.
And you shared the same, you know, 95% of the same interests, and now you don't.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing. And then another thing is I don't want to be involved too heavily in business with friends.
Mm, really?
It's just, there's like, I have a couple of really, really good friends in poker. And there's always this, like, we will never cross that line of 95%. Because there's always like competition and business involved. Mm-hmm. You know, we deal with money with each other, and we sometimes have to negotiate basically. I just don't want it.
Yeah.
It's like, I rather would be like, no, you know, I'm like, we don't do this. I like, yes, it would make us both money, but I prefer to.
Yeah, of course.
And that's a tough thing in that regard. But yeah, this I'm happy to not. I'm happy, like, actually getting out of poker now to, like...
Mm. So you're retiring soon, or you're going to be out of it, or...
out of a lot of things in terms of the very professional part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like I don't see myself as being a professional right now. When I play, I compete and on the best level I can, but I don't, you know, I play maybe 5 to 10% of what I used to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it as, like...
Yeah.
Low-key activity.
Got it. This is called the three truths. I ask this question at the end for everyone. So you're pretty young. You're 24 right now, right? Let's imagine you have a very long life and you achieve everything you want.
That's probably not going to happen.
Let's just imagine.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Let's just imagine that you accomplish anything you want. You have amazing relationships. You travel everywhere. You launch businesses. And it's the last day for you.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, everything you've created has been erased. All the videos you put out there, the apps, the mindset training, everything you've done is gone. The business is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a piece of paper and a pen to write down three things you know to be true about all of your experiences. And this would be the only thing that people would have remembered of you by, or these three lessons or these three truths. What would you say are yours?
I think the first thing I would say is that you should not get stuck. Like, don't get stuck in something because you think that's what you should do. Like, follow the things that you feel, just what feels right. I think that's the second thing I would say is to question everything in a happy way. Like, not beat you up, but just in a curious, nice way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is it like this? You know, to like take it more like, oh, there's some way to, because everything is endless. You know, there's no end to it. There's always something new coming. And the third thing I would say is that be true, like, be honest and be, don't pretend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just be, take care of the people around you that you feel are, like, respect and value the way you are, and stand up for them and stand up for yourself.
Nice. That's a great, man. And what's the main thing you're focused on now, or how can we stay connected to you? Where do we connect with you online?
Yeah, actually, like, the now that I kind of, you know, play a little less poker, the big thing I focus on right now is really, and we talked about this before, contributing. Like, I'm actively looking for a way to do that, and so the company I started has that. That is a long-term goal. Like, I really feel like the one big thing that has always been in my head is education. Is like, I mean, call it growth, personal growth, like, whatever. It's like kind of learning something in a way where you can apply it yourself. So you don't need constant really rely on something, but like you learn something and you can use it yourself, and then you can improve it, build on it, give that person back, teach other people. So it's this like mastermind idea of constant growth. Everyone is going in his direction. Then you share, filter it, repeat. Like you grow this. This is what kind of environment I feel the most comfortable in.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to build in a company. And that's what I'm working on right now. So
what's it called?
It's called Primed. And the idea is to launch this umbrella company, which now happened, and build a team that shares that mindset and be really free about it. So like that you can do whatever you want, basically, as long as it's in that spirit, right? And like we set goals together, and it's like we decide together is like this is the direction we want to go into. And it's like people take responsibility for their own stuff. And the only, like, it's really this really, really broad thing where in that thing, like, you know, people can thrive. That's the idea, is like really giving people space, because I think that's what's, that's where we're developing into. It's like I personally cannot be in an area where it's like, where you're caged. And I think there's a lot of people that feel similar right now.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's not this opportunity, and it's growing, but I want to create that space. And so we're basically developing whatever comes to our mind. It's like, you know, we started at the beginning with like, we launched a mindset app now called Primed Mind. And it was just, I've been working with this mindset coach, Elliot, and it was just, you know, I love that. And it's like all my friends, everyone I recommended, he's working with a lot of world-class athletes. And it was just like, everyone loves what he does. And it was like, he only does private sessions. So I was like, let's give this to people because we can. And then we made that happen. And the next thing was like, oh, we're excited, you know, about children education. So we worked together on this new app. It's about, because every children educational app on the market is crap. It's just like, it's only about making money. Gamify it as much as you can, but don't care about that didactic or like what that you teach them. Like there's the best one is half in German. It was like, how should they learn English? But so things like this, and it's like, okay, we see something and we're like passionate about something. It's just like, you know, let's just see if, you know, if we can change something. This is like the basic idea is to build that framework for people to like do whatever they think has the most impact.
Yeah. Nice, man. What's the website for that?
We can learn more. So the website, actually, we're launching our website in, we've been working a lot on this. We want it to be like, we've been playing around so much with it. It's primedgroup.com. You'll see, I think, new website coming up in beginning of October. So that should be cool. Soon. And then primemind.com for the app. People should check that one out. It's
primemind.com. It's good. Yeah, for the app, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a good
free
app.
Free app, or is it a?
Yeah, it's freemium. You can use it. Sure. Really important. Take time for it. This is really the main thing. Like the feedback has been amazing. We have like 25,000 in-app feedbacks of like 4.9 out of 5 or something. It's like, you know, people have been. And the main thing is take the time for it. It's really like if you have to close your eyes, it takes 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. You put in earplugs and you just lean back. And it's basically the idea is it's mindset coaching for a specific situation. So it's not like meditation where you're like, there's no kind of reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like generally, okay, you're meditating, but what for?
Yeah.
And this is, okay, you have a job interview now and you just want to perform better. Right, and that's the idea of like why I use it for poker is if it's something high stakes, right? If something is at risk, 5% matter.
Yeah.
Right, and this is not gonna be like, oh, I'm a completely new person, but I feel more in the zone. I feel fresher. I feel more confident. I feel like, you know, I can deliver.
Yeah.
And so you listen to it for a specific thing, and then it has an impact. So this is the idea behind it.
I like it, man. Well, I appreciate you being here. And Fader, I want to acknowledge you for your brilliant mind and your ability to teach others how to master their mind as well. Because I think a lot of people are struggling with that anxiety, stress, fear, just confusion. And to share what you've learned on how to master something and give it to others is a great gift. So I want to acknowledge you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. The final question is, what is your definition of greatness?
Oh man, you're like, there's a lot of deep questions here. greatness. I think, I mean, the thing is really with greatness, I think it's so relative. It is really like this word itself, all these words are so relative, right? Like, we've been great at things years ago, and now it's like not even remotely close to being great,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think, to me, greatness means that your goal is to become the best at something specific. You visualize it and you put everything you have towards that goal. And I think that is, to me, people that do that, and there's only, like, I think everyone is lying to themselves when, like, nobody, A, a lot of people don't have that goal. B, nobody puts everything towards it. You know, it's like maybe a lot of them, 80%,
mm-hmm.
50, like, most of them, 50%. It's like, you know, how do you... my goal is to become the greatest at this. And it's like, okay, how much time do you put into it? And it's like, oh, yeah, like 40 hours. Why not 80? Right? Why not every minute you've got? It's like everything. I feel like even the holidays I took were towards, you know, this goal. It's like even every minute I slept was like, okay, I was like, okay, just to be ready again to do this.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, if I played soccer, it was because I needed balance to like do this again, mm-hmm. right? So it's I feel like every single minute of my life was towards becoming the best at this. And I think that was not conscious, but I think it can be. I think if you want to be great at something, I think that's what you have to do. Mm-hmm. Put every single minute you've got into it.
Mm-hmm. Peter, thank you so much, man. Appreciate you.
You're welcome.
There you have it, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this one with Fetter Holtz. If you did, share it with your friends. LewisHowes.com/544. You can take a screenshot of this podcast that you're listening to on your phone and post it in your Instagram story. Post it on your Instagram page, Facebook, Twitter. Tag me at Lewis Howes and let me know what you enjoyed about this episode the most. Every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we bring the most inspiring humans in the world who can teach us something that they don't teach us in school on how we can become greater in our life. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. Very excited about it. So let's get the word out and make sure to connect with Fetter as well and let him know what you thought about this also on his social media. I hope you remember how amazing and unique you actually are. You're here for a reason. You're here to make a difference. You're here to live your dreams. You're here to love others. And you're here to fall in love with yourself. Now, these are all things that we need to learn how to do. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And I hope this episode is giving you some type of insight or tool about how you can perform and pursue your dreams without buckling under pressure. We all have these opportunities in life to make something happen. But sometimes we allow the fear of messing up or the fear of not being enough hold us back. And I don't want you to be held back. I want you to be able to move forward with a passion and a poise and a process. So I hope you guys enjoyed this one. You are so meaningful in this world. Never forget that. And always remember that you're here for a reason. It's your job to figure out what that reason is. I love you. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.